Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents What and Bothered by Fiona Davenport. Narrated by Griswold Adams and Georgia Gray. 1. Silas. I pulled off my leather gloves and flicked my fingers over the logs in my fireplace. The sparks that fell ignited the kindling, and the fire was soon roaring. It wasn't cold outside, but there was a fall nip in the air, and one of my favorite things to do was open the windows and light a fire. Plus, any humidity helped to reduce static electricity. Everything in my home was grounded to the max, but even touching the metal coin in my pocket didn't always quell the shock when my skin transferred electron charges to whatever I touched. Being able to manipulate electricity could be a handy tool, but if I wasn't paying attention, well, I'd fried enough kitchen appliances to keep the local furniture store in business. Satisfied with the flames, I tossed my gloves onto the coffee table and opened the windows on both sides of the fireplace, as well as the sliding glass door that went out onto a big deck that faced the thick woods behind the house. I ran a hand through my shaggy white hair as I jogged up the beautifully carved wooden staircase in my log cabin to the primary bedroom. The second floor consisted of a large suite that faced the back of the house, and across the hall were two smaller rooms that were connected by a Jack and Jill bathroom. As I entered my room, I was already pulling my shirt over my head to drop it into the hamper. Sometimes, taking off my long-sleeved shirts felt like removing a binding from my lung, allowing me to breathe deeply. Even after 20 years, it wasn't much easier to deal with the constant reminder of what I'd become by wearing the necessary clothes to protect anyone who came too close. Skin-to-skin contact was the only time I had no control over the voltage I was charged with. It was unpredictable, and I learned the hard way that I needed to wear long-sleeved shirts, pants, and gloves whenever I was around other people. I discarded my thick work pants, and after a quick shower, I pulled on a worn pair of jeans that were light and comfortable. I zipped them, but didn't bother with the button as I wandered back downstairs to the kitchen. There was cold beer in the fridge, so I grabbed a bottle and made a sandwich, then took everything back to the couch. With a sigh, I plopped down and finally relaxed. It had been a long-ass day at work, and I was fucking exhausted. I had accidentally fried a cherry picker when I wasn't paying attention to my natural output. There were power outages because people overloaded sockets and did all manner of stupid shit that involved electricity. And I had to deal with downed power lines because some pimply little teenager wanted to impress a girl and plowed into one of the poles when he lost control of his car. Without the cherry picker, I had to climb the handholds up to the bucket at the top of the pole. The areas around the small town where I lived, formerly known as Stream in the Woods, had been slowly gentrifying over the past few years, bringing more residents and businesses. While the growth might have been seen as favorable to most, it was a downright pain in the ass to those of us who lived in the place that had been dubbed Screaming Woods 20 years ago. Perhaps that wasn't true of everyone who still resided here, but the majority of the inhabitants wanted to be away from prying eyes, and from the inevitable screams that erupted whenever they were spotted. Here, monsters were welcome and safe, albeit lonely. It wasn't always like this. Stream in the Woods had once been a joyous town. Most of us who grew up here had never intended to leave, but we didn't anticipate being forced to stay because there was nowhere else for us to find peace and acceptance. I'd been among those who had planned to spend my life here, to marry, raise a family, grow old, and watch over my grandchildren. My whole family had lived here once. But since that fateful Halloween, only my little sister, Maggie, and I remained. A few of our cousins had been affected, but had chosen to brave the wide world, where they discovered that monsters had no place in it. I drained the bottle of its contents and finished off my sandwich, then stretched out on the couch and stared up at the ceiling. I didn't make a habit of dwelling on the events of the past. It wasn't like it would do any good. But for some reason, I couldn't stop thinking about the life I'd been building before it happened. Inevitably, my memories turned to the night that forever changed us. Literally. Maggie and I had shown up early for the party on that Halloween night. Like all celebrations in this town, the event was sure to be full of fun and joy. We were like one big family and never missed an opportunity to reconnect with each other amidst wonderful food, music, drinks, and any other merriment we could come up with. But that year, Maggie was hosting an activity for the kids in her store, something special. She'd changed it to something wicked shortly after everything happened. We'd greeted everyone as they arrived, and the festivities had kicked off with a bang. One of our locals, Dr. Boris Karloff, whom Maggie and I had nicknamed the Mad Scientist, was known for the unusual and highly anticipated concoctions he brought to parties. He'd promised the beverage, which he'd called Frankenpunch, would add a little sparkle to our already merry event. The homemade brew tasted awesome, like orange sherbet and whipped cream, my favorite dessert. Although Maggie swore hers had tasted like chocolate-covered cherries, which happened to be her favorite treat. Then the town bell tower had tolled midnight, and our world shattered into something frightening. Monsters emerged. Friends I'd grown up with suddenly screamed in pain as their bodies shifted into grotesque shapes, some with tusks, wings, scales, all manner of creatures. My sister had fallen into my arms weeping as her sweet, round face became longer, the angles sharpening, especially a noticeably pointed chin. Her beautiful auburn hair turned black. Her skin bubbled as it turned bright green. Her nails lengthened and turned sharp, almost like talons, and her body vibrated with dark magic. I'd looked at the chaos and then doubted myself, wondering why I had remained the same. Why had I been spared this monstrous fate? Maggie's blue eyes were full of anguish when her transformation was complete. I placed a palm on her cheek to reassure her that things would be all right, but snatched it back when a shock zapped between us. We assumed it was the magic filling her and avoided touching again. Pandemonium had broken out. People were scared, hysterical, and crazed. Unused to their new features, people stumbled, flew, slithered, and crawled in every direction. When a pair of stone wings snagged on a power line, it brought the pole crashing to the ground. I knew that the exposed conductor would easily start a fire if I didn't get it under control. I looked around for something to cover my hands so I could safely touch the wire. but I couldn't find anything. So I'd yanked off my shirt, ripped it in two, and wrapped the halves around my hands. The thin material wouldn't protect me completely, but I had hoped it would at least keep me from being electrocuted. Running over to the spot with the most damage, I bent over to examine it. Suddenly, electricity zapped between me and the power line in a visible arc, like lightning. However, instead of going into cardiac arrest, my body seemed to absorb the current. I pulsed with the heavy voltage, and the power line went dead. It didn't take long to realize that I was now a walking, talking battery. Maggie had followed me and witnessed the change. Then she reached for my hand, which was still covered by my shirt. When she touched me, her body was hit with so much energy that she flew backward and hit the ground. The voltage should have killed her. I supposed if there was one silver lining, it was that the dark magic inside her had kept her alive. That was the last time we touched with anything less than thick leather gloves between us. A few days later, I was working to help clean up the carnage in town when I overheard a scream. I was installing a new outside light beside the front door of my sister's shop, and I peeked around the corner of the building to check out what was causing the ruckus. My sister was plastered against the wall with tears overflowing from her eyes while Miss Gulch ran toward me. The crotchety spinster always looked like she'd been sucking lemons, but as she neared me, I was taken aback by the malice in her expression.
"She's a monster!"
Miss Gulch screeched, pointing at my sister.
"A witch!"
Rage exploded inside me, and I grabbed her wrist to stop her from going around me. I intended to give her a piece of my mind, but instead, I was forced to release her when she shuddered violently and fell into a heap at my feet.
"Oh, shit!"
Maggie yelled as she dashed over to the woman and checked for a pulse.
"Shit, shit, shit!"
She laid Miss Gulch flat on her back. Then Maggie closed her eyes and put her hands on the spinster's chest. Green and black mist rose from the ground and swirled in the air. Miss Gulch suddenly jackknifed up into a sitting position and screamed at the top of her lungs. Her wild eyes took in her surroundings. Then she jumped to her feet and screeched,
"They're all monsters!"
as she sprinted away.
"I should have left her dead,"
Maggie muttered as she climbed to her feet. On instinct, I held out my hand to help her, then quickly pulled my arm back in case she accidentally slid her palm against mine, and the next lifeless body at my feet was hers.
"I'm sorry," I rasped, feeling completely helpless and dejected.
"Me too. But at least I was able to save her. Although, I won't waste my magic on her a second time."
I forced an amused smile, but Mags saw right through me.
"It's okay. At least I make myself laugh."
That brought out a genuine chuckle, brightening her disposition. "I should probably grab some gloves," I sighed. And she nodded, her expression sympathetic. That was the last time I touched anyone, with or without gloves.
2. Juniper. I'd only been on this trip with my parents for a day, and I was already bored out of my gourd. My dad disappeared first thing this morning, so I'd been stuck hanging out with my mom, which wasn't my favorite thing to do. She and I didn't have much in common, and I would have been much happier going camping than wandering the streets of some random town while she shopped to her heart's delight. She'd spent a ridiculous amount of money, but she was still cranky when we returned to the rental house a few hours ago. Ordering dinner in from a Spanish tapas restaurant and polishing off an entire bottle of wine hadn't helped either. She still had a squinty look on her beautiful face as she leaned back in her chair across the table from me. Remember that darling hair salon we saw in town today? My mom's nose wrinkled as she looked at my lavender-tinted blonde locks. I could call to see if they have any openings for tomorrow. If the offer had been made out of kindness, I might have taken her up on it. But she had been quite vocal about how much she disapproved of my new hair color, so I knew she only mentioned it because she was hoping I'd dye it to something more normal. I don't think that's a good idea. I wouldn't want to hurt my hairstylist's feelings by cheating on her. My mom's lips pressed into a firm line. I knew she was holding back an angry reply, but it wasn't as though she could say much when she kept quiet every time my dad cheated on her. She only stayed with him because her priorities were messed up, which was why I refused to let her disappointment get to me. Finally, she let out a little huff. Fine. I suppose I'll eventually get used to this new look. I don't know. I was thinking about changing it up again when we get home. I waggled my brows. Maybe I'll go with a rainbow look this time. Rainbow! She echoed with a shriek, her eyes going wide. How will you ever find a husband if you insist on walking around looking like a freak? I don't need a husband, Mom. I haven't even finished college yet. Not that I cared much about getting my degree, which was why I hadn't bothered to apply to a 4-year degree program yet. I was just taking classes online through a local college because it kept my dad off my back. He controlled the purse strings, and I couldn't afford to make him too mad until after I figured out what I wanted to do with my life. You know how important getting an education is to Dad. My father was the perfect shield against my mom, so I wasn't surprised when she backed down. Only about my hair, though. Since her identity was completely wrapped up in her husband's, she couldn't understand why I wasn't focused on going to a prestigious school and getting my MRS degree like she'd been when she met my dad in college. That doesn't mean you can't look your best in case you meet someone appropriate, or even just so you don't embarrass your dad in front of his business associates. How would I get the chance to embarrass Dad? My brows drew together as I rolled my eyes. We're on vacation. Crossing her thin arms over her chest, she arched a brow. Who do you think he's golfing with today? No clue. I assumed his tea time was an excuse to get some time alone, especially since it was well past dark and he hadn't returned to our vacation rental house yet. One of his biggest clients has a second home here, so your father thought our little trip was a perfect opportunity to socialize with him in a more relaxed setting. I finally understood why they'd wanted to spend our vacation in a town I'd never heard of before. This trip wasn't really a family vacation. It was an excuse for my dad to schmooze some rich guy he wanted to impress. Same old story, just in a different town. I see. As though he had an internal radar that let him know we were talking about him, my dad finally came walking through the front door. My mom called. We're in the dining room, darling. A few minutes later, he strode toward us with a smile on his face that made me wonder if he'd found someone to keep him entertained after his golf outing, and that was why he was just now getting back. Pressing a fist against my mouth, I puffed out my cheeks at the bitter tang in my mouth.
How was your shopping expedition?
He asked, bending down to brush a kiss against her cheek. It was good. Her lips curved into a satisfied smile. I was surprised there were actually some decent stores.
I never doubted for a second that you'd be able to find the best spots for shopping.
He rounded the table, pulled out a chair, and sat down.
Did you clear them all out?
My mom shrugged. I bought a few things. A few things? I barely held back my snort. We'd been so loaded down with bags that my arms still hurt from carrying most of them.
I'm glad you managed to keep busy. Sorry I was later than expected.
Have you eaten dinner? My mom gestured toward the containers where we'd packed up the leftovers. I could make you a plate since I overordered as usual. I heaved a deep sigh over how they both pretended they were a normal couple who actually cared about each other. Unfortunately, that drew my dad's attention to me.
Did you enjoy shopping with your mother?
When he asked questions like that, I couldn't help but wonder if he ever really saw me. I found a pie iron that I can't wait to try out the next time I go camping. Your daughter insisted upon dragging me into this horrible little trading post store. My mom gave an exaggerated shudder. They actually carried live bait. Can you believe it? You could purchase worms, insects, and tiny fish right there to take home with you. I smiled at the memory of how she'd shrieked when the customer in front of us bought some crickets. How else did you think people got their bait when they wanted to go fishing? She pursed her lips.
I don't know, dear. I've never given much thought to anything having to do with fishing. Maybe James will be interested in fishing.
My mom's attention shifted to my dad as she asked the question I was thinking. Who's James?
John Winston. The client I golfed with today brought his son as a part of our foursome. James was quite impressive. He even came close to a hole-in-one.
He chuckled softly.
Now that he's gotten his MBA, John is training him to take over the business someday.
Knots were forming in my stomach. Why would it matter if his son is interested in fishing?
The boy will be the head of a company that accounts for more than $1 million in revenue annually for my business.
He speared me with a look.
He's offered to show you around town, which is an opportunity we can't afford to pass up.
Oh. Going against what my dad wanted was a lot harder than resisting what my mom wanted.
Please, try to be more articulate when you meet with him.
He wagged his finger.
The sooner the better. We're only in town for so long.
Yes, sir. I pushed away from the table and stood. I think I'm going to take a walk to work off some of the calories from dinner. The excuse was an easy one, since my mom always worried about weight, hers and mine. The low murmur of their conversation drifted toward me as I slipped my feet into a pair of hiking boots, grabbed a coat, and searched for a flashlight in the drawer in the table next to the front door. Although I was certain my parents assumed that I was going to stick to the sidewalks lining the neighborhood where we were staying, the lure of nature was impossible to resist. Darting across the street, I crossed through the park toward the tree line on the opposite side. Stomping into the woods in a town where I wasn't familiar with anything probably wasn't my best idea, but I had always taken comfort in nature, much to my parents' dismay. I assumed I would be safe enough, until I wandered just deep enough into the forest that I couldn't easily find my way back out again, and my flashlight died.
3. Silas. I finally shook off my thoughts of the past and got up to take my dishes into the kitchen. My phone buzzed in my pocket as I dropped my bottle in the recycle bin. Before answering, I put my plate in the dishwasher and touched the coin in my opposite pocket. Then I withdrew my cell and grinned at the sight of my sister's smiling green face. "Hey, Mags," I greeted. "How was the muggle date?" She sighed.
That joke is so old it crawled into a coffin and died.
I laughed and leaned my hip against the counter, crossing one leg over the other. Only because you have no sense of humor, I teased. In reality, I was making light of the situation in case the night had gone badly, like all the other times she had tried dating. So? Maggie was quiet for a moment, and her sadness bled through the phone, forming a lump in my stomach.
He stayed through dinner,
she answered softly.
I thought I might actually make it to dessert for once. I tried to fool myself into believing he was just engrossed in his meal and not trying to avoid looking at me, but I should have known better.
I wanted to kill the asshole. One handshake was all it would take, but me going to jail wouldn't do anyone any good. He didn't deserve you, I declared. It was true, but I knew it wouldn't do much to heal my sister's bruised heart. He obviously couldn't see the good thing right in front of him.
And how would he have seen something good? She scoffed. The only thing sitting in front of him was a green witch who everyone blamed for all the havoc that Lindsay caused until the house dropped on her. Also blamed on me. He tried to do it when I wasn't looking, but I saw him checking out my shoes. The wicked witch of the West.
I didn't know what to say. She wasn't wrong, and my only advice was for her to stop letting the matchmaking company set her up on dates. To stop trying to find love. But I was afraid it would leech out the rest of her goodness and leave nothing but a cold space for the dark magic to fill. I hope you whacked him with your broom. Maggie was silent for a moment. Then I heard a little giggle.
No, but I offered him a ride home on it. Then I spilled water on myself just to see him squirm when he thought I was about to melt.
Laughter rumbled in my chest, and I smiled. Did you make a little steam?
Yep.
The pea popped, and she chuckled.
You should have seen him. His skin turned almost as green as mine.
Maybe next time I should come along, I suggested in a cheeky tone. Give the next guy another shock. Maggie snickered.
Seriously, bro, you need to find some new material.
Hey, I'm fucking hilarious.
I'm glad you think so, since no one else does.
I gasped dramatically and pushed away from the counter to wander into the front room. I'm hurt, Margaret Hamilton Adler. Hurt, I tell you.
You'll get over it. Well, I'm going to revel in the disaster that is my love life while I finish inventory at the shop. Love you, Silas.
Love you too, Mags, I replied as I stretched out on the couch.
Oh, I almost forgot. Do you remember Phineas Crane?
My best friend's dad? Growing up, Eli Crane and I had been inseparable until they moved to Sleepy Hollow. We'd kept in touch for a while, but I'd shut myself off from most everyone except my sister after the incident in town.
Yeah, it was the weirdest thing. He came into something wicked earlier today.
Maggie's shop was an eclectic mix of books, antiques, and occult items. Was he still a jackass? Phineas had been a lousy husband, and an even worse father.
Considering how he looked at me when I asked about Eli, I'm going to say yes. And he refused to talk about his son. It was really strange. He seemed almost scared. Before he left, though, he told me I should forget about Eli unless I wanted to lose my head.
What?
Weird, right?
We speculated on what he could have possibly meant for a few minutes more. Then she sighed and mumbled something about inventory again, so we said goodbye and hung up. It was still relatively early, but fall had swooped in fast.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?